The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to Vox Markets. I am John Heumann and I'm delighted to be joined today by Randy Smallwood, Chief Executive Officer of Wheaton Precious Metals, one of the world's largest precious metal streaming companies. Welcome to Vox, Randy.
John, a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
No, thank you for taking the time to speak to us. It's perhaps a company that's, and in fact, an approach that's not hugely familiar to investors in the UK who are more used to traditional mining models. So perhaps you can start by introducing yourself and tell us a bit about Wheaton and what precious metal streaming actually means.
Well, that's exactly why we listed on the London Stock Exchange about 3 years ago, was to try and bring the streaming business model to the UK, because we think it's a very unique way to invest into precious metals, especially specifically precious metals mining. And so we created the streaming business model about 20 years ago. In fact, next year will be our 20th year. So I guess it's exactly 19 years ago that we started this. And it's a business model that's based on building a contractual partnership, a relationship. You sign a contract with an operator. And what we do is we supply some money up front to help them fund their growth. But we do that to get a portion of whatever metal is being produced at the mine. And typically what we do is we go to the copper mines and the lead zinc mines of the world. And because all those copper mines, they produce a little bit of byproduct gold and a little bit of byproduct silver, all those base metal mines. And so what we do is we approach all those copper mining companies and we say, here, let's sign this contract and we will get 75% or 100% or 50% of whatever gold you produce from this mine, which means we get a little bit of the, we get the production risk and reward in terms of how these mines do. But what's interesting is that when they deliver us that gold in the future, they sell it to us at a greatly reduced price, typically about 20% of the spot price. And so what this means is that you get access, when you own Wheaton stock, we get access to these mines and all the good minerals and the value of the minerals they produce, but we don't have the cost risk. Our costs are defined by the contract. Our cost is defined by the amount of money. Our capital cost is the upfront money we pay for the original contract. And the operating cost is the 20% of the spot price that we pay when each gold ounce is delivered to us. And so for every ounce of gold or every ounce of silver that we get from these mines, we pay, our cost for that is about 20%. And then we turn around and sell it into the market at the full spot price, which means we're profiting. Our operating margins on these streaming contracts are about 80% right now. So from an investor's perspective, traditionally, you could either invest into gold and just go buy gold. The problem with buying gold is it doesn't grow. Gold is constant. It stays there. You can go and buy mining companies. And of course, if you're lucky and invest into a good mining company, you'll have all that great success in terms of exploration growth and exploration upside. But if you invest into a streaming company, you get that same exposure with no cost risk. And that's one of the challenges of the mining industry, is that typically they always overpromise and underdeliver. They always have costs that are higher than expected, which means less profit back to the shareholders. Whereas in our company, the contracts are defined. We know exactly what we're going to be paying on a per ounce basis. And so the risk is dramatically reduced, and yet we still get all the exploration upside. We still got all the expansion potential of some of the best mines in the world. And so it delivers a real strong, powerful, low-risk product to our shareholders, precious metals production. And yet you get all the optionality of higher precious metal prices, of exploration success, of expansion potential, all of that's delivered back. And so it's a real powerful business model. And as I said, we created the model 20 years ago, and it's now one of the dominant sources of funding for the mining industry in terms of how they build and grow mines out there, is to go to streaming companies and do a stream financing. And at least we deliver very, very low risks to our shareholders.
Mm. So perhaps give us an idea of the scale of your operation. Yeah, how much are you producing each year?
Well, Well, this year we'll produce pretty close to 630,000 gold equivalent ounces. Now, most of that is gold. About 55% of our revenue comes from gold, and most of that gold comes from copper mines. We've got a number of partnerships. We've got 19 different mines around the world, mostly in the Americas, North America and South America, but we've got a few mines here in Europe that are also delivering us metal. About 55% of our revenue is gold. About 40% of our revenue is silver. And then we have a little bit of palladium and a little bit of cobalt that makes up the last 5% of the production. So what's particularly exciting right now is that 630,000 gold equivalent ounces that we're producing this year, again, at a cash cost of somewhere just over $400 per ounce, that is going to grow. We've got an incredible growth profile coming forward, and within the next 5 years, we'll actually be very close to 1 million gold equivalent ounces. Right now, it's scheduled to be 970,000 gold equivalent ounces by 2027. So, really exciting times at Wheaton.
So perhaps tell us then, that scale, I would assume, makes you a very, very attractive partner to miners themselves. How do you go about selecting your mining partners? And tell us a bit about the pipeline. Presumably there's a lot of new partnerships to come.
Well, it's one of the things that I think differentiates Wheaton is that we are very, very selective about who we partner with. We're focused on making sure that we invest into high margin assets so that not only we're profitable and our shareholders are profitable, but the operating company needs to be very profitable too. And so we look for the lowest cost mines in the world. We typically focus on the bottom, on mines that fall into the bottom half of the respective cost curves. And so that's a real key differentiator between us and a lot of our peers, is that we focus on those high margin assets, because not only will those assets withstand challenges in terms of increases in costs and poor, sometimes they'll make poor management decisions, stuff like that, but they're also the first place that our partners reinvest into to expand or to spend exploration dollars to try and find more, because they are the most profitable mines. And so when a mine is profitable for all of its stakeholders, that means all of its stakeholders are interested in keeping it running and making sure that that the assets still continue delivering. And so we're out there very selectively looking for opportunities. We turn away a lot more than we actually embrace into and sign contracts on. But we've been very busy. We've added 10 new streams over the last 2.5 years. And a bunch of those are development projects that are going into construction, and that's one of the reasons why we have so much growth over the next 5 years. Is a lot of those projects are coming into production, as I said, over the next few years here. Pretty exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the things I've been reading about is the sort of looming deficits in certain metals, particularly copper, because of a lack of investment in recent years. So presumably that investment is now starting to come through, given this looming supply deficit.
Yeah, the challenge is a lot of the more recent transactions are much smaller mines, and the problem is inflation has really impacted the mining industry pretty heavy. And so the big copper mines, the ones that actually are substantive in terms of worldwide copper production, we're just not seeing a lot of investment into that. Those big copper mines typically cost $5 to $10 billion to build. And when you're talking about capital that big, there's a lot of concern about inflationary risk and inflationary pressures on those costs. And so not a lot of companies are moving forward with those big builds. It's also getting tougher and tougher to permit these assets and move them forward. And so, most of the recent transactions we've done are on the smaller scale in terms of the size of the actual operating asset itself, but they still produce some healthy precious metals, byproduct precious metals for us.
So you mentioned that you're predominantly focused on North America. Do you intend to expand, more globally?
Well, it's not North America, it's the Americas. And in fact, it's South America that is our dominant jurisdiction, or Latin America, so to speak. Mexico, or the three most important countries for our company right now is Brazil, Mexico, and Peru. And so relatively stable jurisdictions, very comfortable there. But we do look globally. Now, political risk is something that's important to us. And so we are pretty focused on stable jurisdictions, mainly because we want to make sure these are life of mine contracts. And we have in our current portfolio, 30 years of reserves, another 14 years of measured and indicated resources, and 20 some odd years of inferred resources. So we've got over 60 years of reserve and resource life in front of us. So political risk politically stable jurisdictions are very, very important for us, and we're not going to step into the riskier jurisdictions, mainly because we hope to continue getting, as I said, over resources from these mines for many, many years into the future.
Absolutely. Perhaps let's talk about the outlook for precious metals themselves. Obviously, as a your cost model obviously means that you seem somewhat shielded from fluctuations in precious metal prices. But obviously, the higher the better for you, I guess. But so what's your view on what's happening across the sort of precious metal spectrum?
Well, John, I'm also the chair of the World Gold Council right now. It's a rotating position amongst the producers and streaming companies of the world. And so I've been the chair now for, 2.5 years. I've actually, I've overstayed my welcome, I'm sure. So we're very, very optimistic in terms of gold. When we look around the world right now and some of the challenges that we see, and face it, inflation is a real challenge for society right now. And what is inflation? Inflation just means that the dollar or the pound or the euro that you have today isn't going to be worth the same as it is today a year from now, 2 years from now, 5 years from now. And so inflationary pressures like that will ultimately support gold, because gold has forever been the store of value, the measure of value and the store of value that survives through challenging times like that. And so as we look around and we see the challenges with respect to the different fiat currencies and the fiscal mismanagement of most countries' budgets around the world in terms of their own financial plans and the ever-increasing debt loads around the world, and we look and see at just money printing in terms of how much effort has been put into floating the economy, but by using a currency that has absolutely nothing behind it, nothing backing it, other than the word of a government that continues to spend more than it takes in. And so, as we look around the world, and then we start looking at other issues, like the Russia-Ukraine conflict and other potential political risk, political items, we can't help but be excited about where gold is going to go. Good, strong support for the precious metal space right now. To be honest, silver, which is also a very important metal for us, is one of my favorite metals, mainly because gold as a constant store and measure of value is always going to be used for that. But silver, when we talk about the greening of the planet and critical minerals and electrifying the planet, silver actually has some incredible technical aspects to it that make it one of the most important minerals for us, one of the most important metals for us as a society to continue to improve. Silver conducts electricity better than any other metal, better than copper, better than gold, better than any other metal. And so the more silver that we put into our high-efficiency electronics, whether it's smartphones, smartwatches, laptop computers, iPads, electric cars, solar panels, the more silver there is, the more processing power you have, the less battery life you need, the more capacity you have, the less waste there is. And so silver is playing an ever-increasing role in the space. And so what are the two metals? I've actually got a bit of a slight preference for silver. And as I said, we've got about 40% of our revenue coming from silver and a lot of optionality, a lot of other projects that aren't scheduled for production yet. They're still waiting for their permits. And so we're probably one of the best ways to invest into the silver space. And that's not even the dominant part of our company. Our company is focused on the gold side. And so we're very, very bullish on gold for a lot of reasons. And when we look around the world, but we're even more bullish on silver. I'm pretty excited about where we can take this. And with our growth profile over the next 5 years, you can imagine how that's going to impact. We should be easily clearing well over $1 billion U.S. dollars per year in cash flows over the next few years as we grow the company.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's quite interesting that, in this energy transition, copper gets talked about, lithium gets talked about, but not silver. Why do you think that is?
Well, it is pretty expensive on a per unit basis, but what's particularly impressive about it is that it takes very, very little silver to make a huge difference. And so if you just blend ionic silver, small little ions of silver into a copper wire, you dramatically improve its conductivity. And so, what we're seeing is increased efficiencies as it's coming in. And so, silver does need to be because it's actually even more important to society than copper is and nickel and lithium and cobalt, mainly because the more silver we use, the less of those other products we're going to require. So it really delivers what society is looking for, and that is just less waste, more efficiency.
On the subject of greening and greening the planet and the environment, one of the things you mentioned earlier was difficulties in permitting. Do you think there's a sort of imbalance between what the minerals required to make the world a greener place and the sort of worries about the environmental impact of mining? It seems this sort of a circle that's difficult to square.
Well, one of the important aspects of society that we need to focus, we need to improve on, is a phrase that I call circularity, and that is how much of the product gets recycled. When you mine copper and then society consumes it, how much of it does get recycled, right? And one of the beautiful things about the gold industry is that gold has 100% circularity. It always gets reused. It never gets discarded. It never gets disposed. It never gets wasted. We're not there yet with copper, with nickel, with zinc, with cobalt, with lithium. We're not to that 100% recycling level yet. And that's one of the things that we need to do as society, is to continue to focus on that and move that forward. And I think that's probably one of the most important aspects of it, is, you know, we as a society have to push harder to make sure that we achieve circularity. And then the other aspect of it is that, you know, I always get frustrated when I see, you know, jurisdictions that have good, strong environmental and social protective measures in place to help, support. But then you have countries that won't go forward with moving projects forward. But what they wind up doing is, by denying those projects, all they do is shift that production to other locations around the world that don't have those same levels of environmental and social regulatory framework. And so pushing production into obscure locations doesn't do anyone good. As a society, we have to have a little bit more of a global perspective. And so, you know, we're a Canadian company, and I can tell you Canada is becoming a pretty frustrating country to try and move resources forward. And yet here we are, a country that has a track record of strong technical and environmental performance and constantly improving. There's no doubt that we as a society and we as an industry have learned, and we're a lot better than we were even when I started in this industry last decade, last century. We've dramatically improved over that time, and we continue to improve. So there is constant improvement, but what frustrates me is when people just say, we don't want it in our backyard, but we're happy to consume all the products itself. I think society does need to take some ownership for the costs of delivering this and make sure that it's done in a responsible and effective way that minimizes the impact and maximizes the benefit. And so it is something that society needs to embrace.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was speaking to someone the other day who mentioned, you know, the other frustration is that a more modern mine will be less environmentally impactful. With the latest technologies involved in that production process. It is very strange. Presumably, you're looking for those best-in-class miners with the latest, greenest approach to getting minerals out of the ground.
Yeah, we're actually one of the first of the streaming and royalty companies, we've essentially sort of replaced and modified the royalty space, but we're one of the first ones to actually contribute back to the communities around the sites, and we have a very, very strong ESG program, and because a lot of our funding is there to fund growth in these assets as they come forward, you know, one of the best benefits of that is that we have the ability to have influence in terms of how some of these mines get built. And I can give you plenty of examples. I'm not going to talk specifically, but plenty of examples of situations where we've pushed them to actually get to a better level of environmental performance. Water efficiency is one area where we've had some projects come to us where they had traditional tailings, which is pretty water inefficient, and we've convinced them to switch over to dry stack tailings, which the water consumption is dramatically reduced because so much of it gets recycled and reused in the process. And so you know, there's lots of examples of that. We're constantly, you know, it's one of the things that we study when we look at these things. We want to make sure that they're best in class. The other benefit that we have is that because we look at so many different operations around the world, we do get a good sense of what best in class is. And we make sure that we share that with that experience with all of our existing partnerships to try and make them that much better, that much stronger.
Yeah, absolutely fascinating. Randy, it's been an absolute delight talking to you. Thank you so much for sharing your insights. It's a really fascinating story, and certainly encourage everyone to go and have a look at Wheaton Precious Metals and the business model. Thank you, Randy.
Well, John, I appreciate the opportunity. We love it over here in the UK, and you know, we are, as I said, London listed along with New York and Toronto. So we are committed to the United Kingdom, and look forward to spending more time over here and hopefully gaining more shareholders over here. We think that what we provide hasn't been provided in the UK in the past. And we are so much lower risk than a traditional mining company, and yet we deliver all the same upsides that a good mining investment has. And so hopefully we've converted a few of your listeners.
Yeah, I'm sure you have. Thank you very much.
Thank you, John.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.